You're on a GLP-1. Your appetite is changing, your cravings quiet down, and food noise is finally fading. But now you're wondering, how do I manage my side effects? What do I eat to stay strong? How do I break through a plateau? Because reaching your weight loss goals can take more than meds. That's where Weight Watchers Med Plus comes in. The support designed to help you navigate what comes next. With trusted experts who guide you, food plans that work with your body, support to help manage side effects, plus access to GLP-1 medication. Weight Watchers Med Plus is designed to help you lose more weight. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com. All medical services are provided through our affiliated medical group, Weight Watchers Clinic. Medications require eligibility and prescription. Individual results may vary. See site for more details.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by JC Abbott. JC, man, you and I were going back and forth, and it didn't seem like there was going to be enough news to even do a pod this week. But then all of a sudden, boom, Thursday happened, bro. CFL news in your face.
Yeah, one thing after another, right from the moment I woke up in the morning as a proud Pacific timer, right until the evening. It was all day nonstop, major story after major story. You don't get many days like that in the off season, and they're a thrill when they happen. They really are.
It's just me and the cheese, and we're going to get to the goods. But dare I say, JC, there has been some, albeit slight, pushback about our look, man. And I don't understand how people can't like it. I've heard essentially, I don't want to say unanimously because there has been a little bit of pushback, but that people feel like the website looks more professional, the logo is more sharp. So we do want to hear the feedback, but I will say I'm a little bit surprised to hear that. Nah, I don't like the look of your site. I think it's just because it's new. So if everybody
can
just
don't
take
like
a breath,
change.
That's what I was going to get at too. I understand it's new, but you'll love it. There's still some more tweaks to come. We are working also on the user experience. I think people should understand that. We've had some direct communication with some of our dedicated readers, so we do appreciate their blunt feedback. But everybody, just give it a little bit of time. I think you'll like the new format, and I understand change can be difficult, but the fresh look, man, it just looks oh so nice, buddy.
It looks super crisp, and let's be real, in 10 years' time when we update the site again, or hopefully sooner than that, people will complain about how they liked the old look back then too, and they never should have changed it. It's just the way of the world. People don't like change, but they'll get adjusted to it, and once it becomes the new normal, I think everybody will be on board, like most people already are.
Just trying to keep up with the times, everybody. Let's get to it. We're discussing the Ottawa Red Blacks swapping not only kickers, but Canadian kickers.
A Canadian quarterback returning north.
Wonder who that could be. The Edmonton Elks, high-priced offensive line.
The Winnipeg Blue Bombers breaking the bank.
And Chad Kelly supposedly becoming a new person. But first, the Canadian Football League has suspended receiver Ajoh Ajoh for at least 6 games for violating the gender-based violence and harassment policy. A third-party investigation corroborated claims the 24-year-old made, quote, aggressive and unwelcome physical contact, close quote, with multiple women at a Regina restaurant on Tuesday, November 18th, the night of the Rough Riders Grey Cup parade. Saskatchewan released Ajoh immediately following the announcement, with general manager Jeremy O'Day telling 3downnation.com there is no chance he could re-sign with the team if the Canadian receiver happens to be reinstated by the CFL. In your opinion, JC, how did the league and the Riders handle the situation?
I think it was handled very well, and a stark contrast to the situation that we experienced a few years ago with Chad Kelly, who we'll talk about a little bit later in this podcast. I thought there was transparency from the league in putting this announcement out. Like, they have shown under the tenure of Stuart Johnston as commissioner. They were giving more information than they had to. There's still a lot we don't know, a lot of stuff that's kept under wraps here about the details of the allegations and how it came about. But the league was more forthcoming with the process. They laid out exactly how he can be reinstated. And I thought they gave us everything that we needed to from that perspective. And then the Riders both making the bold decision to release Ejoa Joe rather than wait around for this suspension and for him to be potentially reinstated sent a clear message about what this organization cares about from a moral standpoint. But also Jeremy O'Day calling a press conference, sitting down in front of the media, and we know the Regina media can be the toughest in this country when it wants to be, and handling those questions with, I thought, grace, class, with clarity of vision. I thought he was able to answer most of what we wanted from him, and he deftly avoided any major blunders and mistakes. It was a very different persona than what we saw from Argonauts leadership a few years ago, when they were slow to react, slow to address the media, and they bumbled and stumbled out of the gate at every turn when they were asked the tough questions. There's lots to discuss in terms of how the gender-based violence policy is applied, you know, whether it's transparent enough from an investigation standpoint, whether these punishments are too harsh for things that have not resulted in criminal charges. We can have those discussions, but I think from a handling of the situation standpoint, both the league and the Riders did incredibly well.
Totally agree there. Stuart Johnston and his transparency on these matters so far has been, I think, welcomed by fans around Canada and CFL fans around the world at that. And I think that the Riders were professional in their approach here. Jeremy O'Day did not have to do a press conference and face all those difficult questions, but I thought it was done fast. Credit to Ariel Zur for setting that up, and O'Day handled the questions, I thought, professionally and understood, you know, what was going to come his way and didn't make any excuses in terms of the Riders selecting Ejoa Joe in the CFL draft and then having him on the team. Then he went to Indianapolis and came back last year and actually started in that 112th Grey Cup victory. So kudos to the Rough Riders for facing it head on. And I'll go to another level, JC, because you asked this question and followed up on it to be sure that Jeremy O'Day is not even going to entertain possibly bringing back a Joe if he does get reinstated by the league. And the league has said that his process to potential reinstatement will include a minimum of 15 mandatory counseling sessions conducted by a gender-based violence expert, a psychological assessment by another independent expert, and a meeting with Commissioner Stuart Johnston. So if those are completed to a satisfactory degree, he could be eligible for reinstatement, but there's also no guarantee here. And I think you drew the exact parallel that I had in my mind, because I was there in person when Chad Kelly was on the field during rookie minicamp with the Argonauts. I was there in person when Michael Pinball Clemens fielded questions from the media at Alumni Stadium when training camp opened there. And that was the exact opposite way to go about it. The way that the Rough Riders handled this situation, and we need to admit too, there's a whole bunch that we do not know, but from what we know, I think it was handled very professionally. Now, the football impact to me is what I would rather focus on with these situations, because nobody wants to be there, right? Like Jeremy O'Day, that's not what he wants to be talking about on a Thursday in April. He wants to be planning for the CFL draft and getting ready for training camp, but he faced it head on. So credit where it's due. But from a football perspective, Ejoa Joe, and O'Day confirmed as much to me when I asked him, was penciled in as likely one of three Canadian starters in the receiving group for the Saskatchewan Roughriders. So it wasn't like this was a back-end player on the roster who just played a few special team snaps. This was a guy that the Riders thought had the ability to be a legitimate week-in and week-out starter. Heck, as I mentioned earlier, he started in the Grey Cup. So now with Joe gone, O'Day confirmed to me that it seems like Del Duncan Busby could be the first guy up to be that third starting Canadian receiver in the group. Trevor Harris has praised him. So when somebody makes a mistake, no matter where it is, on or off the field, that always allows somebody else an opportunity. So a big opportunity for Del Duncan Busby, who, if I remember right, JC, I think you were fairly high on coming out in the CFL draft. Am I right?
Yeah, I was a big Del Duncan Busby fan. I think he's got a lot of the traits that you're looking for as a guy who can step in as that third Canadian receiver. I don't think they're going to lose a ton on the field here from releasing Ajoa Joe. And there are players in this upcoming CFL draft that you can go out and get who can then become the replacement for Del Duncan Busby as that extra Canadian receiver, guy who can step in the case of injury, play a little bit of special teams. There are some bodies like that available this year. Ultimately, this is a sad situation for the player. And I think it's worth noting that this is something that was not exactly a concern coming through the draft, but when we talked about Ajoa Joe and why he fell ultimately to the seventh round, it was about his maturity as a person less though than his ability as a player, because this was a kid who burst onto the scene at Clemson. We knew he had that game-breaking ability, but made a bunch of poor choices that altered the course of his career and saw him fall down a multitude of different levels, and that's why he fell in the draft. There was never any indication that there would be something of this nature, but ultimately it comes down to somebody on a day of celebration and elation maybe having a few too many and making some poor decisions. Hopefully, as a person, he can grow and mature and move past this, look at it with some hindsight, and become a better man going forward. But it is a major reminder that when you're making these decisions on draft day about a player, it's not just about the X's and O's and how many passes they're going to catch and where they fit in your system. You have to evaluate the decisions that they're going to make off the field when they're representing your organization. The Riders gambled on Ajoa Joe. They gave him all the support necessary, and unfortunately, it didn't pan out. I think they were smart to move on here.
It's a reminder for really all of us that we need to make the best decisions that we possibly can, and potentially, and I stress that word potentially, being intoxicated is not an excuse, you know, especially in this day and age with social media and cameras everywhere. So, you know, JC, even just for me, it was a reminder about the decisions that you make throughout a day, a week, a month, a year, and how one wrong misstep, in this instance, the incident with a Joe at a Regina restaurant, could potentially cost him his career. And that goes for literally all of us. So I think it's a reminder. I don't necessarily love using the word sad. I understand why you use it, but we also need to understand the multiple women who were involved here. And I think that word would be better used for them, at least in my estimation. But, you know,
absolutely.
I think looking forward, there are a number of, hesitate to say positives here, but the league being so transparent and the Riders having a press conference less than, I think it was 2 hours, maybe it was just over an hour after the news release went out, was commendable. You never want to have these situations, obviously, but I think it shows what really matters in that organization. And again, Argonauts fans are going to get upset, I think, or there's going to be some people there in Toronto wearing the double blue that get upset, but they could learn a thing or two from how the Riders handled this situation.
Absolutely. And the reality when you're comparing this to Chad Kelly is it's tough to do so from an on-field standpoint, because you're talking about a starting franchise quarterback, reigning MOP player in Chad Kelly versus somebody who's been mostly a depth Canadian receiver who is just now stepping into a starting role in a Joe Adjoa. So we do have to understand that those are different decisions for an organization to make when you're moving on from a player.
But should there be an adjusted standard, though?
That is a question that I think is valid to ask from a moral standpoint and from an organizational standpoint. If you're going to stand on values and say that you support people within your organization, you do have to apply that equally. And the reality is it's often not the case across all of pro sports. And I think across most industries is people are judged on a different curve based on their perceived value. Whether that's right or wrong, you can debate, but it is the reality. The other aspect here is I've seen people come forward and say, you can't compare the Chad Kelly situation to the Adjoa Joe situation because one is criminal and one is not. I think we need to make it very clear that there have been no criminal charges laid against Adjoa Joe. There have been no civil suits filed against Adjoa Joe to our knowledge at this time. This was purely a complainant coming forward directly to the Saskatchewan Roughriders about an alleged incident, and then that was investigated by the league. These are very similar situations in that way because there is not police involvement in either of them. The league has broad powers to impose this discipline, whether or not charges have been laid or whether or not charges can even be laid in a situation of this nature, and they've enacted those powers in both of those circumstances.
That's where I think people are right to point out that there was a civil case in Chad Kelly's example, whereas with Adjoa Joe, as you laid out there, there has not been a civil case, there has not been a criminal case yet. So fans are pointing to Chad Kelly and saying, well, wasn't that one worse? Now, Chad Kelly, as he told the Denver Gazette, we'll get into some of that a little later, said that the real story is going to come to light. You know, there are different sides of a story. I think that that should be out there. But the focus for this segment, I think, should be that the Riders handled this really well, and also what it means from a football perspective for Saskatchewan moving forward, which I think we've covered in a pretty concise and deliberate way.
Canadian quarterback Taylor Elgersma has finally, Justin, signed with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, ending his time in the United Football League after being inactive for 3 weeks due to not having an approved U.S. work visa. Why is the 2024 Heck Crichton Trophy winner changing course now?
That's a simple question to answer, and it's because there was ongoing uncertainty around him potentially getting a rubber stamp on his USP1 work visa. He had been inactive for 3 weeks, not because of a lack of talent or performance in practice. It was simply due to the work visa, from what I understand, based on his standing with the Birmingham Stallions. To start the season, he would have at least been the backup to Matt Corral. And there was even some chatter after the team got off to a 1-2 start that perhaps Elgersma could see game reps if he was able to get the work visa. That did not happen. And I think when you're Taylor Elgersma, who is very smart, and I want to clear that up because I saw some people commenting on social media. I know the cesspool that it can be, but they talked about the light going on for Taylor Elgersma. This is arguably, JC, and you've been around him a little bit too, one of the brightest, smartest, sharpest prospects I've ever seen coming out of not 100%. Only U-Sports, but the NCAA. And I hate saying these kind of things, but I've been covering the CFL draft since 2010. So I'm kind of aging myself there, but it's been a long time. And he might be, in fact, the sharpest. And that's not recency bias or hyperbole. Taylor Elgersma knew exactly what he was doing every single step of the way. So for someone to just throw out there, well, the light finally went on, the reason that he was even trying to get his work visa in the United Football League was because of the feedback he got from NFL teams. He even went and sought out the reasons why the Green Bay Packers released him on his own as a rookie. Could you imagine that? A rookie in the NFL having the cojones, as they say, to go to the head coach and Matt LaFleur, the rest of the coaching staff in the front office, after he's been released, and ask for the reasons why so he can improve and get better. Like, that to me shows how mature he is. And if you can't understand that, then I'm not going to be able to get it through your thick head. But the fact that he was in the UFL was because it was the fastest path potentially back to the NFL. If he would have gotten on the field there, gotten that rubber stamp on his work visa and played some good ball, there have been a lot of players, JC, you know this very well, that have either played in the XFL or the UFL and earned NFL contracts, earned second or third opportunities in the NFL. Like, look no further than PJ Walker, who's now up in the CFL, but he used that route to get another opportunity in the NFL. So that's why he was down there. People need to stop freaking out and yelling on social media, talking in all caps, I suppose would be a better way to put it, about this kid coming to the CFL. I get it. A Canadian quarterback in the Canadian Football League, we talk about them. I talk about them all the time. It creates more excitement around the teams. But if you look at it from Elgersma's perspective, playing in the NFL, you make way more money than you do in the CFL. All due respect. As a franchise quarterback in the Canadian Football League, you do make really good money. But it's not even what you would make on a rookie contract in your first year in the NFL, and you're getting paid U.S. dollars. So all along, it needs to be clear that Taylor Elgersma knew exactly what he was doing. And he's also smart enough to know that he has the opportunity to go to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, assuming they still wanted him. And I think that's a fair assumption based on selecting him in the second round of last year's CFL draft, that that opportunity was going to be there. So I think that's important for people to understand. He made these decisions from a smart, pragmatic mindset. He had some trusted advisors behind the scenes as well who have been through these types of situations a number of times. And then, to answer your question a little more directly, when you get 3 weeks into the UFL season, there's uncertainty about your work visa, and you're looking at the time coming towards CFL training camp ticking away. You're like, yeah, I know for certain that I can go up to Canada, play football, compete, and earn a living to do it. And there's still the opportunity. We've seen it. Nathan Rourke is the most recent example. If he gets on the field, shows well, perhaps lights it up. If Zach Collaros either has to miss some time, or perhaps after Zach Collaros has done his CFL career, that the NFL could come calling again. So I think people need to take a holistic approach. And I understand it's hard when you're a fan, especially in this instance of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. But Elgersma was making some smart, sound decisions. And that's how he arrived at the one that's led him to now sign with Winnipeg.
You laid that out beautifully. And I'll take it a step farther. Not only is Taylor Elgersma smart, if you're one of those people on social media saying that the light went on or that the UFL was an incorrect decision, Taylor Elgersma is smarter than you. Like, that's just the reality. You're not understanding the dynamics at play here. The CFL is a fantastic league, and Taylor Elgersma knows that. He wants to play in the CFL. He wants to be a starter in the CFL. It's something he's dreamed about. But he's also dreamed about going to the NFL, and he knows that the CFL can't offer him two things. It couldn't offer him 11-on-11 game film, at least not yet, knock on wood, okay? And it could not offer him a chance to go back to the NFL this season. And that is a crucial element as well that I think gets brushed under the rug. These spring leagues that have cropped up over the last number of years have put a number of players, a massive number of players, into NFL training camps because they finish right before NFL training camps, and you can jump directly from one to the other as a guy in game shape. Now, that doesn't necessarily give you a better chance to make the final roster, but it does give you a better opportunity to get your foot in the door. And that's really all Taylor has needed throughout this process, is to try and break through this stigma against his Canadian football tape and get more reps in a situation where NFL teams feel comfortable evaluating the tape apples to apples against other 11-man American football quarterbacks. So he wanted to get there this year. Now, unfortunately, the visa issues, that prevents him from playing in the UFL. And it's an utterly amateurish situation from that football league, if I may say so myself. I've covered football leagues across the world in countries that you've never even heard of. And guys who do it part-time as a hobby are able to get work visas for their quarterbacks in those countries consistently and in time for seasons and on short notice. And somehow the UFL was unable to achieve that this past year for Taylor Elgismaa. That boggles my mind. But he waited as long as he could. Now he comes up to Winnipeg, and he has a chance to potentially be the backup, understanding that he'll get that NFL opportunity again if he plays well, but it won't be in 2026, and it may not even be in 2027 if Zach Kolaros stays healthy for this entire season and he doesn't see the field very much. It's a longer-term play to get the bag, which is why it was a secondary option, not a backup option, a secondary one, because he has known from the moment that he stepped foot on campus at Wilfrid Laurier University exactly the path that he needed to take to get to the NFL. He laid it out to me when I sat down with him at the College Gridiron Showcase a year ago before he blew up and was on everybody's radar as a Senior Bowl prospect. He said, the only way that I'm going to get into an NFL camp is I've got to win a Heck Crichton, go to a Vanier Cup. He achieved both of those things at Laurier. That propelled him to the Green Bay Packers. He knew the only way he was going to get back to the NFL was to get 11-on-11 film here. Unfortunately, factors outside of his control prevented him from manifesting that destiny once again.
You know, I go back to Green Bay Packers training camp last August and think he played better than Sean Clifford, who was the number three in Green Bay the year before. And then for some reason, even after Matt LaFleur said he wanted somebody who knew his playbook, the Packers release Clifford and Elgismaa and go pick up Clayton Tune, who did not know the Packers playbook at all. So there are obviously some politics at play there. And then, you know, I look at the Birmingham Stallions and AJ McCarron and whoever else is involved there in terms of talent evaluation. You have to do your homework. I wholeheartedly believe, and this is just my belief, that the Birmingham Stallions selected Taylor Elgismaa in the UFL quarterback draft and did not know that he would need a work permit to play in the UFL. Or if they did, they assumed he would get one when no Canadian before had gotten a work visa to play in that league. So I understand that they wanted to try to be the first, which is great, and perhaps they did know. So I am happy to be proven wrong there. But, you know, based on some of the comments that AJ McCarron has made in the media, I would guess that that wasn't the case and that they were surprised, and it was clear that he was frustrated with Taylor Elgismaa not being able to get his work visa. But I also think that the Stallions drafting Taylor Elgismaa should show to NFL teams that he is a legitimate prospect in the 11-man game. Like, I think this whole idea of Taylor Elgismaa having to play 11-man football and get more tape is bogus. He played in three preseason games and looked really good. And yet somehow he's not good enough to get another opportunity with an NFL team, not even be on a practice roster for a little while. Like, that is the thing that blows my mind. But we're in the here and now, and the next focus for Taylor Elgismaa is going to be going into Winnipeg for training camp and winning the backup job behind Zach Kolaros. Terry Wilson seems like he would be the incumbent there because he's the only quarterback on the roster that's actually spent time in Winnipeg and in the Canadian Football League. You have Peyton Thorne from Auburn and Bryce Perkins, who, interestingly enough, was a UFL MVP himself in that quarterback room as well. So there's some talent there, and that's the focus for Elgersma. Can he actually do it? I believe he can, JC. There are prospects, I'm sure you feel this way through your years as well, just getting a feel for guys, where you get a sense about that it factor. And I hate to say that because it's a bit of a buzzword, but Nathan Rourke had it. And I felt Nathan Rourke had it going all the way back to when he was playing high school football in Alabama. Didn't even have a scholarship coming off of that, winning a state championship, went to Fort Scott Community College. There was just something about the kid where you felt like he had the potential, and if he capitalized on it, he could be a star. And that's happened with Nathan Rourke. That's the exception, not the rule, but you know, just had a feeling. Taylor Elgersma gave me that same feeling from the first time I talked to him and saw him spin that football off his right arm and hand. It was unbelievable. Now you have to translate that to the field, and the CFL, as everybody knows, is a different game than what Elgersma has been playing recently. But I think if you can go in and look really good in the preseason while you're trying to soak up 150 plays per day, he told me, in terms of the installs that Matt LaFleur was putting in, I think he will be able to do it in the CFL. But he knows, and I know, and everybody else knows, that he's going to have to go and prove it. It's an intriguing story, as we've done from the jump with Taylor Elgersma. We will definitely cover it every step of the way. But JC, how do you feel about him from the first time you met him in terms of a prospect in the upside?
He was eye-opening the first time I met him, because I think I am just as affected by the bias against U Sports quarterbacks as anybody. And I wasn't ready to take Taylor seriously, even as a Heck Crichton Trophy winner, even understanding the size and some of the traits, until I saw him live and I saw and heard him throw the football. And then I spoke to the kid, and he is so sharp, so on it, so forward thinking in his approach. I had very much the same experience you did. And I believe wholeheartedly that he's going to go in and he's going to win that backup job in training camp. And I think he's got a leg up and an advantage physically as well, because it almost mirrors that UFL NFL situation in the fact that he's game ready right now. He's been through a training camp. He's been through 4 weeks of regular season practices in Birmingham, and now he gets the chance to take that game-ready body and that game-ready mind and go and compete against guys who have not played in months, some of whom will be playing the Canadian game for the first time. Now, he's acknowledged the fact that it would be naive to assume there's not going to be any reverse learning curve coming back to the CFL from the NFL game. We've seen players experience that in the past, like Nathan Rourke, but now he's given himself enough time to get readjusted. And because he has that physical advantage, I think he is going to be a stud throughout the preseason, and he will cement himself as the heir apparent to Zach Collaros.
It certainly seems like that's the case. Now he's got to go out and prove it. And he was asked to describe his playing style. He's largely, for the people that don't know, a pocket passer. He can move if needed, but that's an area of his game, the mobility aspect, that he definitely needs to improve on. But there is no doubt he has an absolutely electric arm. Electric. And JC said it well. You could hear the ball coming off his hand if you just stand behind him. You don't even have to see it. But when you see it and hear it, it's just something else, man. I don't know if I've seen that kind of arm strength ever live in U Sports football, all due respect to the great quarterbacks out there. But again, arm strength is one thing. Translating that into a football game and being a quarterback, completely different. I think he can do it, but he'll have to go out and prove it on the field. I think, you know, honestly, JC, judging from our metrics on the website, that Taylor Elgersma is already a known commodity coming into the Canadian Football League. And that's pretty rare for a Canadian. At last check, he has 2 of our top 5 most trafficked stories so far in 2026. So I think there's a combination at play here. Like you said, he had a great 2024 season with Wilfrid Laurier, won the Heck Crichton Trophy. you know, battled Laval closely in the Vanier Cup. He takes a massive step up by going to the Senior Bowl through a couple of the lower end college all-star games, let's call them, where you saw him at the College Gridiron Showcase, and then just continued to be in the news cycle because of what he was doing from the Senior Bowl, looking good, hitting a down the field throw there. Then the Senior Bowl at the University at Buffalo, taking charge in the field house. Multiple NFL teams, from what I was told, considered drafting him. He doesn't sign a UDFA contract right after the draft, even after there had been that amount of interest. Then he gets two rookie minicamp invites, Green Bay being the first one. Ends up not going to Buffalo, which was the other one. Signs with Green Bay, goes to camp, does well, tears it up, gets released. A couple days later, the New York Giants bring him in. And a few months later, he had some other NFL workouts. And I will say this, because he alluded to it but didn't go into detail. When he was in Miami, when the Dolphins brought him in, he was there, as he told us, for the longest of any of his NFL workouts. They started doing medical testing, for lack of a better term. And I thought, as I was hearing how things were progressing at the time, that there was a really good chance that the Dolphins could have signed him. That didn't happen, but that could have changed the course of this whole thing. And I think that's what people need to understand, is how actually close he was to possibly signing another NFL contract. It wasn't like this was a Chad Kelly NFL pipe dream, which we'll get to later. He was legitimately that close that the Miami Dolphins kept him around in the facility for the better part of a day. And if you talk to CFL players or any professional athlete who has had an NFL workout, some of those can be very short, in, out, couple hours or less, and you're done. And Taylor said that that was a fact for him in Chicago. That was his shortest workout. But when he was sticking around there in Miami, which was near the end of the season, I think that was in December or early January 2026, that he was that close. So that's why he felt like it was a smart decision at the time to pursue the UFL, because it was really that close. NFL teams don't keep you in the building and waste resources on you if they don't think that there's a chance that they're going to sign you. So that, to me, is why Elgersma played this thing out as long as possible, because he was that close. That's a real key. I think people need to understand it. There's a great amount of fanfare, I think, just for the CFL. Taylor Elgersma signing with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers is a massive net positive, but he has to shut out all the noise, the hype, the excitement, all the rest, and go out and perform on the field. Toronto Argonauts quarterback Chad Kelly told Chris Thomason from the Denver Gazette, returning to the NFL is always his goal. Does he actually have a chance, or is that some faint possibility in another universe?
He doesn't have a chance. This is an absolute pipe dream in the modern era. We are not talking about Dear Brock going down to the LA Rams back in the day. Like, that does not happen anymore. And Chad Kelly is 32 with more baggage than a reality star diva, and is coming off a major leg injury that kept him out for an entire season. There is zero chance, even if he goes out this season and wins his second MOP, that an NFL team will even look or sniff in his direction. That's just the reality of it. It's nothing against Kelly as a player. I'm a big believer in his physical talent and abilities, always have been. But they've made that determination. He is now past his best before date by NFL standards, and there is no backtracking from that. Now, I don't begrudge Kelly for having dreams and aspirations. We all want things in life that we can't have. I'd love to be a billionaire, but it's not going to happen right now. It's not realistic. Chad Kelly needs to understand the NFL is not going to come calling anytime in the future.
Look, it. Chad Kelly is 32 years old. Okay? Just even based on his age, Chad Kelly is not going to be looked at by the National Football League. I believe Michael Riley, as I think we exclusively reported on 3downnation.com, had a workout in his 30s with the Jacksonville Jaguars, but that was it. And I think that was him coming off a legitimate MLP season, but not off a broken leg. And, you know, it's a weird tie-in, but when I think about this topic with Chad Kelly in the NFL, I think about a conversation I had recently with Kenny Lawler. The CFL had a media car wash where there were at least two players from each team there. And Kenny came down and sat at this table, which was awesome, by the way, for lunch. Steve Milton was there from Ticats.ca and ended up being Trevor Harris, Zach Kolaris, Davis Alexander. I hope I'm not forgetting anybody else. But Kenny Lawler was across the table. And I just had to say, Kenny, you know, whenever I see him and the highlight reel catches, I think, man, how are you not in the NFL? And Kenny laid on me such a reflective view on him essentially not taking advantage of the opportunities that were in front of him and making some mistakes that prevented him from being in the NFL for the long term. That reflective view was honestly something that left me awestruck, because Kenny Lawler has been able to see it from that lens. Usually you talk to players, JC, you know this well, and they feel some type of way about not getting the right opportunity, or the NFL did them dirty, or somebody was politicking against them, what have you. But Kenny Lawler didn't blame anybody else but himself in a very reflective way. I can't say that enough. So when I think about Chad Kelly talking about the NFL and doing so at the same time when you're reading Chris Thomason's great article, it lays out a number of reasons why an NFL team would not want Chad Kelly on their roster to begin with, just because of the baggage. So when you look at the baggage, all due respect, and it's been well documented, plus his age, it just is like less than a 1% chance that that would ever happen. It's great to have dreams. I'm not saying don't have dreams, but you need to be realistic. And I think Chad Kelly could actually benefit from listening to a guy like Kenny Lawler, who has understood that he perhaps didn't make some great decisions and didn't take advantage of the opportunities that were in front of him to potentially be in the NFL for the long term. But he's also very appreciative at the same time that he's in the Canadian Football League. I, for one, would like to hear that from Chad Kelly more, instead of on a routine basis in the offseason, and yes, this has become a trend, Chad Kelly talking to American outlets about how he wants to get back to the NFL. How about you go out there, play high-quality football, which we all know that you can do, and be a high-quality person to actually make us believe that what you've claimed to be in terms of a new person is real. Then perhaps that opportunity might come, as little chance as it is.
That was the other element of this article that I found fascinating, was Chad Kelly talking about how he's a quote-unquote new person, laying out sort of the changes in his life, some of his regrets for some of his past actions, and how being a husband and a father has changed his outlook. And I think that's really great for Chad if he is going through that process and maturing. I don't want to dismiss that. I'm sure he does have regrets and does realize he's made some mistakes, and we all grow and blossom as human beings as we age and we develop into new stages of our lives. But I am skeptical about his level of introspection, given some of the way he's handled the media in Canada, us specifically in, you know, recent weeks, not answering questions, being abrasive at times. Like, that to me is not an indication of somebody who is entering a new stage of their existence and fully maturing. And I'll use an example that we've talked about on the pod a little bit in the past. And I don't want to compare these two individuals as people necessarily, but they're both CFL quarterbacks who I think have had to grow and mature in different ways. And Vernon Adams Jr. is the player that I think of, and some of my interactions with him early on in his career in BC, where we did not get along well. And he refused to answer my questions outright for a number of weeks in press conferences after games because he was not pleased about some of the things that I'd written about him. And that was a sign at the time of a player who was struggling with his maturity. But Vernon Adams Jr., I think, has legitimately been introspective. He has changed his mindset. He has impressed me massively in the way that he has grown and matured. I would hope he would think the same of me and my writing over that time as well. And I think he also impressed you at the recent car wash with some of the things that he was saying about how he went through that process. I don't think that Chad Kelly is there yet. And I hope he can get there one day. But to say that you're a new person now and not walk that talk all the time shows me that you don't fully know what that means. And that continues to be a concern when it comes to Chad Kelly. And it's a reason why, until he proves things on the field coming back from this leg injury, we don't fully trust the things that he says in terms of whether he's going to be at full strength or if he's mentally prepared for the challenges that are going to come with that return.
I should note, JC, that Vernon Adams Jr. and I did have a good side conversation about, you know, the website. He says he's a big fan. He checks it every day. I wasn't going to say it, but you brought it up. He even noticed the redesign, thought it looked fresh. And after we were done recording our interview, which will be out on redownation.com in article form, audio and video, in the near future, I said essentially, you know, hey, appreciate you doing that, essentially answering some harder questions, you know, about him starting the season hot and then falling off in recent years. And he admitted that that has happened. He wants to avoid hitting rock bottom in 2026. Those were his words, not mine. He said rock bottom. And then we also talked about, you know, the heated exchanges that you guys might have had in post games, and said essentially he's past it. He understood that you were just doing your job. He believes we do it to a high level and has now, you know, seen that, that we're not necessarily terrible people or out to get him. It's just calling it as we see it. And it's part of the reason, honestly, why he reads the site every single day. And I think why a lot of people read the site is because we call it how we see it as fair as possible. So I think same thing with Chad Kelly. We're just calling it as we see it. And I think talking about Chad Kelly glowingly, the football player, but as you said, JC, you got to walk the talk. Well done is better than well said. If you have to tell people that you're a new person, I would rather you show us in your actions. That will ultimately tell me, you, the fans, and everybody that you are indeed a new person. If other people are saying that Chad Kelly looks like a new person, that's when you've actually reached that. Not when you've made the decision in your head, but you still fall back and make immature mistakes, like not answering some simple questions about your health. And there's some immaturity there. I think that's definitely fair to say. So your point about Vernon Adams Jr. is well taken. They are not the exact same as individuals, but I think it's along the lines of what I was getting at with Kenny Lawler. The fact that Kenny Lawler and Vernon Adams Jr. can look back at their younger selves, and we would be in the same exact spot as well. I can point out so many mistakes, stupid things I did when I was younger. But you need to learn and evolve from them. And I hope Chad Kelly can get there because he's shown on the field he can be an absolute star. He obviously has the name power, being the nephew of Jim Kelly, an NFL Hall of Fame quarterback. Would be great for him to be back playing at a high level 100%. But, you know, I think of something as simple as Chad Kelly last year putting out a, I guess, tease video that he was potentially coming back. I think that was, what, in week 15?
Yep.
Why are you putting that out without consulting the team that you're on? And then your credibility takes a hit because you didn't actually come back. not even just that game, not for the whole year. So let's give Chad Kelly the opportunity to show us, which is more important than anything else, that he's actually a new person.
The Ottawa Redblacks have made a substantial change at kicker, releasing fan favorite Lewis Ward to bring in former Saskatchewan Roughrider Brett Lawther in a move that you first reported, Justin. What's the logic behind that move?
The main key here, I think people need to delve into, and I get that Ward is beloved by Redblacks fans, but it has to do with the kickoffs in Ottawa. So if you're a Redblacks fan and you want your team to be better after a last place finish last season, they have certainly gone out and at least tried to get better, right? Bringing in Ryan Dinwiddie as the head coach and general manager, being aggressive in free agency. And yes, you're going to have to pay to get some of the high-end talent there, but they're able to do that. Sean Burke, the vice president of football operations, and Ryan Dinwiddie, the GM and head coach, are confident that they'll be salary cap compliant. So when you're looking at the fine fixtures and details of your team, one of them being the kickoff, I think that was one of the main reasons why this move was made. You look at last year, Brett Lawther averaged 65 yards per kickoff, even during a season where he was dealing with a nagging back injury. Lewis Ward, who didn't usually have to do that because Richie Leone handled that when he was healthy enough, but he averaged 55.9 yards per kickoff. That's a 9.1 yard difference. That means essentially, and we're rounding up here, that's one less first down the offense has to get to either be in field goal range or potentially score a touchdown. You add that up over the course of a game, that's a lot of yardage. The other factor here, I think, is Ward coming off a down year from a field goal percentage. Now, some people might laugh and point to Lawther and say the same thing, but I think if you talk to kickers around the league, it's much harder to kick regularly on the prairies with the swirling wind and dealing with all that stuff out there than potentially in Ottawa. And the other smaller factor would be just the sheer hang time that Lawther has on his kickoffs and even his field goals, right? Like, you talk to some people in the Canadian Football League, and it depends on how the coaching staff approaches things like when they're going to kick a field goal. Well, Brett Lawther in Saskatchewan was pretty good in terms of hitting a decent amount of field goals from 50 plus. The coaching staff there, led by special teams coordinator Kent Malgurry, they view kicking a long field goal differently to other coaching staffs. They think, okay, we got a long field goal. We got a great cover team here. Even if we don't make it, it's like a punt and we're going down to cover. That's how they view it. Whereas other special teams staffs would view it differently. So I think when you break down the details, you can understand the move here. Is it hard for Ottawa Redblacks fans to hear that Lewis Ward has been released, especially considering he had a great career at the University of Ottawa with the GGs? Certainly. But you can't get mad at that and then also say, hey, I want my football team to be better, because this largely came down to a football move to make the Redblacks a more competitive team.
I think you broke that down brilliantly, Justin. The nuances here in terms of the kickoff position is a good reminder for fans that when we talk about kickers or specialists, punters, whatever, we're not just talking about those jobs. There are other responsibilities, other elements to the decision-making process. And one that often gets ignored is how good is this guy at kicking kickoffs? And the Redblacks had a punter in Richie Leone who could boom those for a number of years. They don't anymore. And Lewis Ward just wasn't going to be an effective replacement there. I believe that Lewis Ward can get back to being an effective CFL kicker. He's proven it time and time again in his career. He is a legendary player in Ottawa football history because of some of the things that he accomplished as a homegrown player through that system. But ultimately, Brett Lawther has been just as successful and has a bigger leg. You're swapping the two worst kickers in the league last year in terms of field goal percentage. So not a big change there for a potential huge upside in terms of your ability to kick from distance and your ability to hit kickoffs. And the other thing that should be noted, fans should anticipate more change at the kicker position going forward over the next year or so. Because when those goalposts move back, that is going to change the dynamic of how strong you need a CFL kicker's leg to be in order to kick from distance. And I'll throw out a local example. A guy like Sean White, who's later in his career, has never had the biggest leg, has been tremendously accurate, but you move that field goal back and now his range goes from barely squeaking 50 to barely squeaking 40s. That's not good enough as a professional football kicker. There's going to be some teams that are going to have to do some introspection, look within themselves, and evaluate whether they can keep these older CFL-style kickers or whether they've got to go out there and be aggressive and find somebody who has a booming leg so they can still hit the field goals that they're used to making under the new field dimensions.
You look at Michael Hughes in Saskatchewan. That has to be part of the thought process there. That guy kicked a 90-yard single that was an absolute boomer out of the back of the end zone last year in Saskatchewan. And I think that's why they made the move to, I was going to say, go with Hughes. He's probably like the leader in the clubhouse, so to speak, for that kicking competition because he's been there and his leg. But I think that's part of the reason why they moved on from Lawther. But if Lawther's healthy, he does have a big leg. People talk about him as being a big-legged kicker in the Canadian Football League. So if he's healthy, I think when you line those two guys up, even if Lewis Ward didn't have a down year and was a little bit better in field goal percentage, well, Lawther can handle the kickoffs and give you an advantage there. And then that also, there's some other parts to this, allows the Red Blacks to dress a global punter. James Burnett, currently on the roster, punted at the University of Alabama. And an even deeper roster construction bit of it is that allows you, an American on the roster, probably playing a bunch of special teams, and usually those kind of guys are on defense as well, but at least another American on the roster there. So it helps you from a even deeper perspective. That said, Lewis Ward would be the number one kicker probably on a bunch of teams' ready lists if there is an injury or if somebody's struggling, because he really only had that one down year. But it shows you how close these margins are as professionals, where you have one down year or you're off just a little bit. And yeah, the team, and they say this, but it actually happens. This is an example, is looking to replace you and get 10 yards better in this example, or 9.1 yards better. JC has no random neg lister, even though people have been loving it, JC. Some people noted your Bryce Perkins random neg lister, and then he went on to be signed. How many other guys are in that category so far that you've noted and then have been signed?
I haven't had a running list, so I can't tell you for sure, but it's getting close to a dozen, I think, who have made it from the list onto rosters. The latest being Alex Hall, talking about kickers in Saskatchewan, who I highlighted on my random neg lister segment a few months ago. The Australian kicker from Oklahoma State is now going to be in Regina for training camp.
There you go. So if you're listening to the random neg lister segment, it is random, but not as random as you might think. Let's go to the three-minute drill. John Hodge has published his CFL mock draft 2.0 with Purdue Boilermakers offensive lineman Giordano Vaccaro sticking at first overall. Were there any surprises, though?
There weren't any true shockers in this list, and partially that's because I get an inside scoop as it's being developed. But the one I will highlight that I think is a little bit off the wall, ninth overall to the Saskatchewan Roughriders, linebacker Eric Roscoe, one of the big risers from the CFL Combine. I think that's higher than people have typically anticipated him. We'll see if things change with the Ajoa Joe release. Maybe the Riders need to more aggressively go after a receiver, but I like that fit a lot, and I like Roscoe as a player. Darian Durant revealed on the Sports Cage that the Saskatchewan Roughriders acquired his rights via trade in 2006 after hosting him for an illegal workout. Is that a bombshell revelation?
I don't think so, because I bet back in the day before cell phones and cameras and phones were prevalent that this probably happened all the time. And I totally get Darian Durant's perspective here that, yes, you're on the Hamilton Tiger Cats negotiation list, but if they ain't trying to sign you real fast, why not go work out for another team, especially if you don't think you're going to be caught? Now, it can go the other way. Johnny Manziel, Chris Jones, where you do get caught and fined, but even that's just a slap on the wrist. So for the Riders to get him and for what he turned into, I think it would have been well worth paying that fine. The BC Lions have signed American defensive back CJ Colden after he was released by the Ottawa Redblacks. Does that fit on the West Coast?
It's a fantastic fit. I like Colden as a player. I was a little bit surprised that the Redblacks moved on from him. BC desperately needs to find younger, capable starters in the secondary, particularly at cornerback. I think Colden is going to be somebody who can compete for a starting job right away. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers publicly revealed their financial details for the 2025 season, announcing a $12.1 million profit. Is that a positive sign for the CFL as a whole?
That's a hugely positive sign. Now, the Bombers did host the Grey Cup, which definitely helps that number. But, you know, according to the team, they sold out every single home game last year. And I think from a business standpoint, there's no doubt. The Blue Bombers are the model franchise in the Canadian Football League at the moment. Need to get it going a little bit more on the field. They don't want to stall out in the East semifinal or West semifinal in 2026, but that is a big number in CFL terms. $12.1 million in profit, I think, shows that Winnipeg and some of these other teams are in a really good position financially. Edmonton Elks general manager Ed Hervey said he doesn't intend to make any major cuts to his offensive line, despite being set to spend approximately $1.4 million on their top seven big men in 2026. Do you believe him, though?
I understand that Ed Hervey probably isn't going to cut Mark Corte or David Beard, whoever doesn't win the starting job in the interior. So I believe him on that part. But if I was Brett Boyko and this team's going American at tackle with Cargo O'Donnell as a guy who can swing out there in an emergency circumstance, I'd be a little bit nervous going into training camp. The Calgary Stampeders teased a new uniform for the 2026 season. How would you change their current look?
There were some people saying that they want the stripes gone, and I think I agree with that. More sleek and simple would do well, but I am curious to see what these new fits look like when they're unveiled. The BC Lions have released Canadians, offensive lineman Tyler Packer, and defensive end Anthony Bennett. Do those moves make sense?
I was a little surprised by the release of Packer just because the Lions are not particularly deep on the offensive line, even though it seems they only intend to start two Canadians there. But I think it's an indication that they will go offensive line in the first round of the upcoming CFL draft. And both of these players probably didn't pan out the way that CFL teams in general, and specifically the BC Lions, hoped. It makes sense to go with some youth at those positions. Former CFL former Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau was photographed at Coachella with his girlfriend Katy Perry wearing a Montreal Alouettes hat. Could you get better free advertising than that?
It's hard to argue with that. I think there are some bigger stars that, you know, I've talked about the CFL in the past, like Ryan Reynolds comes to mind, but Trudeau with Perry, that's hard to beat. No, we ain't getting political with it, but that is a big deal from a CFL standpoint. The league social media accounts were on it. The Montreal Alouettes social media accounts, rightly so, were on it as well. So I thought it was cool to see that he was rocking the Alouettes hat.
200 million on Instagram, Dunk.
There you go.
The 21st biggest Instagram account in the world is Katy Perry, apparently.
That's insane. Yeah, you can't buy that kind of publicity. So credit to Trudeau for rocking the CFL hat. Suspended CFL defensive lineman Sean Oakman has signed with the Pennsylvania Benjamins in the International Arena League. How do you expect him to look?
I think he's going to wipe the floor with some dudes out in this league. For the uninitiated, the IAL is an upstart league this year that has five teams in the United States and five teams in Europe where they play some crossover games. I'm imagining Sean Oakman at, 6'8", 270 against some guy in Glasgow who couldn't even make the EFA. That's going to be a tough, tough matchup. The Arizona Cardinals are sponsoring their own youth flag football league in Calgary, becoming the first NFL team to do so. Is this another missed opportunity from the CFL?
Yes, it is, man. The NFL doesn't care. They're coming to compete on your turf. And if the CFL is really going to lean into this flag thing, they need to be out there in the community, putting their logos in front of these kids who are playing flag football across the country. At minimum, they should have at least been beating the NFL teams to it so that people in these communities were used to seeing the CFL logos. But the NFL is coming, man. You can't just not do these kinds of things and think that it's going to be okay in the long run, because that's the game the NFL is playing, the long run. I get that they have more financial resources to go out and do this stuff, but the CFL needs to be pounding the pavement and be out on the ground more with these logos on the flags across our country. That does it for this episode of the Three Down Nation podcast. It was much different not having John Hodge. I felt like we agreed on everything, JC, which is usually boring for the listeners. So I hope they got something out of it.
We don't agree on everything, but we'll save that for off the pot.
We can agree on Canadian quarterbacks being exciting for the Canadian Football League, but
we don't have Hodge hating on him. There was no Canadian QB hate. That's why this was such a wonderfully kumbaya podcast. There was no acrimony over the Canadian QBs.
Well, Hodge is going to have to cover Taylor Algersma whether he likes it or not. You got no choice, Hodge. That does it for this episode of the Three Down Nation podcast. Be sure to sign up for our newsletter. It's called a newsletter. It's on the front page of our site. Check it out there. We fancied it up with some photos, and there's going to be additional bells and whistles added. But you get all the CFL news right into your email inbox. And we thank you, as always, for listening, reading, watching the Three Down Nation podcast and checking out our articles. JC's got one up on Taylor Algersma. That's a great piece off of his first avail with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Goes into detail about all of his recent stops, you know, from U Sports, the NFL, to the UFL, and now the Canadian Football League. So go check it out. Why don't you?